May is Skin Cancer Prevention Month. According to the Skin Cancer Foundation, there are more than 5 million diagnosed cases each year, making it America's most common cancer. 20% of Americans will develop skin cancer by the time they're 70, and if you've had at least 5 sunburns, apparently your risk of melanoma doubles. Good news, when detected early, the 5-year survival rate for melanoma is 99%. So before you head out this year for some fun in the sun, make sure you know how to protect yourself. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about skin cancer? What do you want to know about the different types, how they're detected, prevented, and treated? What about sunscreen or protective clothing? Any risk factors you've been wondering about? And have you had skin cancer? Can you share that experience with us? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Apple Bodemer is a board-certified dermatologist and an associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Bodemer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Bodemer, can you start by telling us how serious can skin cancer be? I think it isn't at the top of people's radars when it comes to worrisome kinds of cancer.
Well, I mean, we really break skin cancer down into two groups. We talk about melanoma, which is its kind of own animal. And that can range from, as you mentioned earlier, to not very serious at all if caught early, to life-threatening if caught late, especially if it's had a chance to metastasize, meaning that it's had a chance to go to other parts of the body. And often that requires chemotherapy and can be, you know, can really shorten your lifespan and impact your quality of life dramatically. The non-melanoma bucket of skin cancers, there's several of them. The two most common that we deal with are basal cell and squamous cell. And those two typically are not life-threatening unless somebody has a compromised immune system, such as a transplant patient who might be taking drugs that suppress their immune system or other illnesses that might suppress their immune system. They really don't metastasize. They can be pretty destructive locally, meaning that they can grow to pretty decent sizes. They can create wounds that won't heal, that can get infected, that can get painful if nerves get involved, and require surgery. Once the surgery is done, they're typically not something you need to worry about except getting new skin cancers and kind of staying on top of that. And some of those surgeries can leave pretty disfiguring scars. So that's kind of the short and dirty on those types of skin cancers and the risks they pose.
And we'll talk some more about detection and screening and treatment in a bit. But as with many diseases, it seems like our best bet is prevention. What are your main messages to people to lower their odds of getting the different kinds of skin cancer in the first place?
Well, the single most powerful modifiable risk factor for skin cancer is UV exposure. And it does depend a little bit on how much melanin someone has in their skin or how much pigment someone has already. So for people who maybe don't have a lot of pigment, like, you know, a lot of Wisconsinites, or that is a much greater risk, they tend to have more problems with sunburns. And sunburns tend to be really the biggest risk factor, especially for melanoma, but also just chronic sun exposure over time leading to chronic DNA damage of the skin cells is really what increases the risk for the non-melanoma type skin cancers. So minimizing your exposure to UV radiation, especially if you're someone who's got fair skin. We also know that from epidemiology studies that diets high in fruit and vegetables can be protective of both non-melanoma skin cancers and melanoma. So that's something that you can do long term. It's good for us for all kinds of reasons for our health to be eating more fruits and vegetables, but that can also help offset, you know, maybe some risk with skin cancer as well.
Let's talk about putting on that sunscreen. You've been on the Ideas Network before, and you've caught me, I will say, when you say that you said that we need to put on more sunscreen than we think we do, and we need to put it on more often and refresh it more. I'm one of the people, I'll dab a little bit on at the beginning of going out and spending time in the sun, and then I kind of forget about it. Why is that bad?
Well, so the SPF is a measure of how well that sunscreen is going to protect you against UVB radiation. And in natural sunlight, we have a combination of both UVB and UVA radiation. Both can cause DNA damage that can lead to, you know, sun damage, photo aging, and skin cancer. So that's one thing about sunscreen is really it needs to say broad spectrum. And then we also need to apply it appropriately. In laboratory settings, which is where they determine the SPF factor, they use about, kind of for everyday use, about a palm full of sunscreen should cover a body in a bathing suit. So obviously a child is going to have a smaller hand, they'll have a smaller body, but we really need to be applying that much. That can equal 1 to 2 ounces. So maybe a 4 or 5 ounce bottle of sunscreen should not be sitting on your shelf all summer long if you like to be outside at all. The other thing is that sunscreen will sweat off, it will wear off. We wipe it off with towels, with our hands, with t-shirts, and it really needs to be applied every 2 hours, no matter what SPF you're using. So some people, a lot of times, will put on an SPF of 100 and think they're covered for the day, and they are not. Because before you've had a chance to get that benefit of the extra SPF, it's worn off, sweat off, or rubbed off. So that's kind of the rule of thumb, a palm full of sunscreen to cover a body in a bathing suit and reapplying every 2 hours or after getting wet. So if you put it on, you hop in the pool and you're in the pool for, 20 minutes, you get out, you towel off to dry off. Your sunscreen has all gone onto the towel. It's doing a good job of protecting that towel, but not protecting you.
Talking to Dr. Apple Bodemer with UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, board-certified dermatologist. It is the month we think about skin cancer heading into the summer. We're talking about skin safety. You can join in with your questions and experiences at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Kathy is with us in Madison. Kathy, hi.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I lost a brother to that at 30 years old. So when the mole gets itchy in different colors, definitely go see somebody. It's 100% curable, and I'm sure you're going to agree with that at that time. So I'm an advocate. If I'm at the water park or anywhere, if I see a mole that's funny on somebody, the complete stranger, I'll tell them, hey, you should get that looked at. So we could be advocates of that, and no one else has to go.
Kathy, thank
Wisconsin's
you.
really big on that because the farmers, we're all outside, farmers, the fishermen, so it's a big thing here.
Kathy, thank you so much for sharing that. So sorry about the loss of your brother. And Kathy brought up, those moles that look suspicious or funny. Dr. Bodemer, what kind of warning signs can we watch for and say, I better get this one checked out soon?
Yeah, well, anything that's changing over time is that's really important to get that looked at. We have our A, B, C, D, and then we have added in the E. So something that's asymmetric, something that has kind of a fuzzier or lobulated border. Color, it's common for people to have two different colors in a mole. When we start seeing three different colors, or especially colors that are really different from each other, like pinks and blacks together, or pinks and dark browns together, that gets us much worried rather than like a light tan and a dark tan. So those disparate colors are important. And then diameter, that's really a loose one. We often say bigger than a pencil eraser, but some people just make big moles, and that's kind of them. And a big mole isn't necessarily bad in somebody who has that constitution. But really the biggest one is something that's out of character from everything else you've got, and something that's changing over time. So I call it the bad egg and evolving. So those are really, and it's important to watch your skin, to look at it. And I recommend everybody look at their skin once a month or at least every other month so that you're comfortable with the kinds of moles you've got and the kinds of moles your body makes. You're going to be much better off in terms of catching something early that's new or changing.
And Kathy brought up another interesting point. I think a lot of us might think, oh, I'm going to the beach, I'm going to put on sunscreen, or I'm out by the pool all day, I'm going to put on sunscreen. She mentioned the people who are, farmers or other people who work outside regularly or people out in their fishing boat. Can you talk about their need for sunscreen, even though, only some of them is going to be exposed?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is just important that you protect those exposed areas. The other thing just to highlight about water, there's a lot of boaters in Wisconsin throughout the state, and fishermen and water recreation is a big thing, especially in the summer. And what the UV radiation will reflect right off of the water. So that's a time where people might be wearing hats or they might think they're protecting themselves. They maybe have a covering on the boat that directs them, that blocks them direct from the direct sunlight hitting them. But we also have to think about that incident UV radiation from the reflection. And that can happen on water, sand, also in the winter on snow and ice. It's something we still have to think about.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking about how to protect ourselves from the sun's ultraviolet rays with Dr. Apple Bodimer, board-certified dermatologist and an associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about skin cancer and sun protection? Have you yourself experienced melanoma or other types of skin cancer? Do you feel like you're doing a pretty good job of keeping on sunscreen when you need it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. May is Skin Cancer Awareness Month, so we're talking about sun protection, risk factors, and skin cancer detection and treatment with Dr. Apple Bodimer. She's a board-certified dermatologist, associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about skin cancer, sunscreen, sun exposure, tanning, burns, moles, and more. Or your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Go back to your calls now. Jordan is with us in Marengo. Jordan, hi.
Hey there. How's it going?
All right. What do you want to tell us about, Jordan?
Well, in the early 80s, when I first moved to Madison to go to college, I ended up with a suspicious mole on my left flank. By the time I got to Students Health Services, it had sunk a root down into the blood-bearing area of my skin, and they told me I was very likely to have serious trouble within 5 years. And pretty much 5 years after that, it came back, metastasized into my lymph nodes, and they told me at UW Hospital that I will be dead in 3 years. And basically, I walked away. I never went back. I never went back for any supplemental follow-ups or anything. I figured I'd just live out my days. Well, it's been 30 years now and I'm still here. And so, yeah, I want to assure people that the the chances of a negative outcome are pretty real. But my real question is, I've reached out to a couple cancer research places because it's very rare. I mean, about 1% of the population spontaneously rejects melanoma after a metastasis. And I'm just wondering if my DNA is useful to anybody. So there it is. Thanks.
Jordan, thanks for the call. Sorry you went through that. Glad you beat the odds, though. I guess it sounds like Dr. Bodimer, can you talk about that?
Yeah, it is. Well, I said melanoma is a very unpredictable cancer. And he's right. He really dodged a big bullet, especially back then. You know, the drugs we had weren't that good. And, you know, any metastatic melanoma really was a death sentence for most people. You know, I have a patient that I've took care of at the VA who had a similar situation. It was in his brain, his liver, it was everywhere. And he lived for 30 years. Nobody knows why. And, you know, there's just things we can't explain about melanoma. I think even a lot of oncologists would agree. It's just a really tricky, it's a tricky cancer. And there's a lot of differences between melanomas from person to person and between our own immune systems and what we're able to do. And at this point, I'm not aware of any studies looking at specifically DNA of people who have had kind of basically spontaneous remission of very advanced melanoma. But, you know, I think that would be something just to keep an eye out for. Yeah, I'm not aware of any ongoing current studies on that. But yeah, you know, that's really an amazing story. And I'm so glad that you had that outcome.
Well, and Jordan's story really hammers home your point about catching melanoma early, and I guess illustrates the difference it can make if you can catch it early before it goes into that state, gets into other organs and metastasizes.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens then when you've got that diagnosis, you've got that early melanoma? Can you talk a little bit about the treatment for that?
Yeah, so for an early melanoma, we look at them and we want to know if it's broken through the bottom layer of the skin. And if it hasn't, we call that melanoma in situ. And those melanomas, we've just cut them out. We take 5 millimeter margins and we kind of go down. We make sure that we didn't leave behind any cells that could come back and misbehave. And for the most part, that's really all that happens. Now, those people are at risk for developing second melanomas, but the risk for that particular melanoma to metastasize is very, very low. You know, the next stage is sort of if it has broken through that basal layer of the skin and has kind of gone into the dermal tissues, We really want to know how deep, and do we think it's had access to the blood and lymphatic system? And that really is a measure. The pathologists measure the depth from our biopsy specimens or our excision specimens, and that gives us an idea of whether or not we really need to be thinking about going in doing lymph node sampling. And so if you're at a stage with a lymph node sampling, if you come out with negative lymph nodes, that's also a really good sign. And, you know, obviously if the lymph nodes are positive, then we move on forward and look for metastases in other places with scans. And then that's when, if we find it, that's when we kind of think about chemotherapy, immunotherapy, some of the new really amazing drugs that have come out in the last 5 years or so.
Thanks again for that call, Jordan. We'll go to Karen next in Sparta. Karen, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about, Karen?
Hi. Well, I have had psoriasis since I've been like 12 years old. So I am under the regular care of a dermatologist. I have used light therapy, UVB light therapy, for most of my life. I'm 60 years old. And so I get checked quite regularly for any kind of cancerous stuff. Well, my question is, if you emphasize the broad spectrum sunscreen, why do they make anything that's not? That's what I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. If it's such a necessity, why are we even making sunscreen that is not broad spectrum?
Oh, interesting, Karen. Thanks for the call. Dr. Bodemer?
Yeah, that's a good question. Our sunscreen regulation in the United States is really not optimal. And a part of it is that even across the world, we don't have good ways of measuring UVA protection. So one of the safeguards that you can use is really looking for physical blocker sunscreen. So when we think about sunscreens, we have physical blockers and chemical blockers. And the chemical blockers do a pretty decent job at blocking UVB, but we really have no way of measuring how well they're blocking UVA. And they often need to be combined. Whereas the physical blockers are more of a force shield, is the way I think of them. They go on the skin. So that's zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, and now iron oxide is kind of hitting the market and getting more popular. So they, UV radiation will actually hit them and deflect off of them. When we're dealing with the chemical blockers, UV radiation, both UVA and UVB, I'm sorry, will hit those chemical blockers and they get absorbed and turned into heat. So I think I have not seen a sunscreen now that's marketed recently that does not say broad spectrum or says UVA and UVB. It's just that we have no way of really measuring or having good quality control around how much UVA protection a lot of those sunscreens are giving us.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Dr. Apple Bodemer, a dermatologist and associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at skin cancer prevention and detection and treatment. Back to your calls now. Tom is on the line in Green Bay. Tom, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, like from Cabela's, I just ordered a shirt, and I noticed that in there it says it blocks UVA, UVB, something like that. Does it matter what kind of material that the cloth is made out of? Is a long sleeve T-shirt that's made out of cotton the same as a long sleeve T-shirt made out of nylon?
Tom, thanks. Great question, Dr. Bodemer. Does the kind of clothing matter?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, so when you've got those UV radiation protective clothing, they usually have a UPF factor rating. 50 is the most common, and what that means is no matter what the fabric is made out of, that it will block 1/50th, or it'll block everything except 1/50th of the UV radiation that it gets exposed to. So they really do a great job of protecting us against UV radiation. When we're thinking about just fabrics that don't have that rating, then it matters on the color. So lighter colors block less than darker colors. And also the weave. And one good rule of thumb is if you can hold it up to a light bulb and you can see light through the fabric, that's about as much UV radiation is going to get through that. So, you know, a sheer lightweight cotton top that might be light pink or light blue or pastel is going to feel very cool in the summertime, but it's also going to let a lot more UV radiation in than a darkly covered, tightly woven fabric. Now, cotton, you can find all different kind of weaves for cotton. It can be tight weave. It can be loosely weaved. Denim There's a lot of denim out there that is cotton, and denim is very, very dense and offers pretty decent protection. The other trick is if it doesn't have that UPF rating, it's going to drop that protection as soon as it gets wet. You know, so even like a dark navy, tightly woven cotton long sleeve shirt, once it gets wet, you really, really diminish that UV protection. Whereas those UPF rated clothing, they don't diminish their UV protection once they get wet. So
thanks
good
a
for
lot
for getting that shirt and use it a lot this summer.
All right. Good call then, Tom. Another Tom now. Tom in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I tanned very well, but as a child, this is before sunscreens, we went in the winter from Wisconsin to Miami, Florida, and I got burned quite severely a couple of times. So I wondered, is the risk cumulative? Are you more at risk being a child than being burned?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the risks are greater when you have the sunburns earlier on in life. We do know that. So childhood sunburns, especially sunburns that lead to blistering, will definitely increase your risk of skin cancer, especially melanoma, because with melanoma, we know it's high intensity intermittent exposure. With the other types of skin cancer, it's more of a clock that kind of just keeps ticking. It's just the chronic long-term exposure and the chronic sunburns that really will add up and accumulate to increase the risk of those types of skin cancer.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. And Dr. Bodemer, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Dr. Apple Bodemer, a board-certified dermatologist and an associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. We talked to her today about skin cancer and how to protect ourselves from the sun's UV rays, especially as we enter into the summer.